Hi everyone, and welcome to the special Meet the Board series featured once a month on Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast. Each week on Wednesdays, Managed Healthcare Executive features C-Suite healthcare professionals whom we speak with about the most important issues in healthcare. In our Meet the Board series, we spotlight a member of MHE's editorial advisory board so our listeners know more about our board members and their roles in healthcare. The Meet the Board series is broadcasted at the end of every month. So be sure when you tune in to listen in and learn a lot. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast. My name's Brianna Contreras, and I'm Associate Editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. In this episode, Senior Editor Peter Werwein and I catch up with MHE Editorial Advisory Board Member David Calabrese, Market President of Health Plans and PBMs at OptumRx, for another segment of our Meet the Board series. The three of us discuss Calabrese's career history, his personal well-being lifestyle, and his thoughts on the approval of the Alzheimer's drug Aduhelm, as well as the Biden administration's interest in putting more generics and biosimilars in the market. Hi, David. How are you doing today?
Doing all right. How about yourself?
Good. Thank you. Thank you for joining up, Peter and
Thanks
I.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. We're glad to have you and feature you on this episode of the Meet the Board podcast series.
Excellent. Glad to be here.
All right. So for the first question, and can you just tell us how you got into pharmacy care in your career?
Yeah, so I sort of followed in the footsteps of a family member. My grandfather was a pharmacist. He owned a local community pharmacy in the town we grew up in Connecticut. And I was little at the time. I used to run around his store, probably causing all kinds of trouble. But I was enamored, I know, at the time by just how much he meant to our community, how much people relied on him. I was enamored by the work. I was enamored by it was one of those old-fashioned pharmacies with the soda fountain and all, you know, and much of what he did was compounding medicines and pill, you know, and creating different types of syrups and solutions and all of that. And, you know, it really hit home as I started to get older that the way he serviced the community and the value he brought to our community, and people relied on him often more than they did their own physicians. They'd always come to him for advice. He was, he's getting calls at home. And that was something. I was always strong in math and science. And, you know, as I started to make career decisions, it was pretty clear to me right from the get-go that that was the career I was going to pursue. And so been in it my entire career and 30 plus years and pretty much all in managed care pharmacy as well. I had the good fortune of going to Northeastern University, which had a cooperative education program where you're working every other semester in the field you're studying in. And my last co-op rotation happened to be with what was Harvard Community Health Plan. I don't know if you're familiar with them. That's the predecessor to what is now Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare that is now becoming Point 32 Health with their merger with Tufts. So I got, foot right in the door working within one of the pharmacies, one of the staff model HMO pharmacies, and really gained an appreciation for managed care and what that means, being able to work side by side with the physicians and the nurses and, being part of committees that were focused on quality, things that, really had no exposure to in pharmacy school, and kind of fell in love with it and was thankfully offered an opportunity to come on when I graduated as a full-time pharmacist, and the rest is history, stayed in managed care my entire career.
And David, Peter Werwein here. What was the name of the town in Connecticut and your grandfather's name?
Yep. Town was Waterbury, Connecticut. My grandfather was Ralph Paolino, and he and I were close buddies. I lost him, unfortunately. I think I was in sixth grade at the time, and he and I were really close, and I was always, with him, and he was a great individual and someone that I've tried to emulate throughout my career. My dad, on the other hand, also, a hero in my life. He was a hardworking guy. He was a mechanic. So ran his own service station with his two brothers, worked his butt off, taught us the meaning of, hard work, dedication, commitment to quality and service. And so I think both of them have major influence on my life and how I've tried to work and how I've tried to lead in my career.
And Waterbury was probably a pretty tight-knit community in these days, maybe. And what was the name of the
You're going to test me. He had inherited it from another, and he maintained the name, and it was I can't remember. So Jones Drug. There we go.
Perfect.
It was a Rexall pharmacy. I knew it would come back to me.
Jones Drug.
Jones Drug. Yeah.
Cool.
Wonderful. Well, for the next question, can you share how long you've been on the board for Managed Healthcare Executive?
I think we're going on, this is my 7th or 8th year, but I've been affiliated with the journal and its sister publication, Formulary Watch, for 20 years now. So I was introduced to the publisher back then, where there was an opportunity to take on a role as clinical editor-in-chief back in 01. And you know, I really enjoyed it. It's been a great ride. And, you know, I know we're in a different, you know, era now, and things have changed quite a bit in terms of digital, but, you know, I've enjoyed working with, you know, with both publications throughout the entire time I've been here.
Awesome. Could you share any of your thoughts maybe on either publication, more so if, you know, things that you've really enjoyed seeing or things you'd like to see more of?
Yeah, what I enjoy most about Managed Healthcare Executive, and I'm not just blowing smoke because I hear this from my colleagues as well who are in leadership roles, is the diversity of information, the timeliness of the information. People struggle with, we have so much being thrown at us, you know, time and time again from all different angles, whether it's listservs that we're part of or publications we're subscribed to, you know, conferences, et cetera. It's often hard to stay on top of all that. What I've enjoyed about MHE in particular, and what my peers enjoy about it, is the topics are timely, they're informative, and I think the thing that I appreciate most is how other organizations are dealing with, you know, critical issues that are in front of them, whether they're a regulatory issue, a clinical issue, an administrative challenge. I like, you know, understanding, best practices, case studies, you know, how did someone else deal with this? Those are things that help us be better as an organization, and your ability to share that in a broad scale manner makes our jobs that much easier. So I commend the team for, you know, it's always, you know, I would say my experience is topics are always timely, and they're always, you know, in that top 10 in terms of what we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis, what's pressing, what's burning amongst our clients, and what we need to do to pivot moving forward in terms of how we operate to stay ahead of the curve with regard to changes coming down the pike.
Thank you for that.
Yep.
Now, your job has changed at Optum. So what are you doing now, and how does it differ from what you were doing?
Yeah, so for the last 7 years, I've served as the chief pharmacy officer here at OptumRx, where I oversaw much of our clinical strategy, our clinical programming. And as of the beginning of this year, I was tapped to take on a new responsibility, which is far different. And that's leading one of our major segments within OptumRx. It's the segment, the business segment that calls on health plans across the country outside of UnitedHealthcare. So it's all of our health plan business and other PBMs that we support in various ways, all to mid-market PBMs that we partner with for various services as well. The bigger part is the health plan business. So we've got 30 plus health plans that we're contracted with nationally. They range from small regional plans to large blues plans and other, you know, sizable regional accounts. My job is now really business focused. It's helping grow that business, maintain that business, but more importantly, it's maintaining strong working relationships with our health plan partners, making sure we're meeting their needs, making sure we're partnering with them in a proactive manner to help them address, you know, their biggest challenges locally, helping them to grow their businesses, regionally differentiate themselves, particularly from a pharmacy perspective, as they pursue new business in their regional markets. And it's been a very rewarding experience. It's been a change. Tell everyone that I drank from the fire hose for the last 6 months in terms of infiltrating myself into this new role, but I've really enjoyed it. I've learned a ton. The organization's been extremely supportive. The clients have been extremely supportive. We've got some great momentum behind us in terms of our growth trajectory, some great opportunities that lie ahead. And so, for me, it's been an extremely rewarding and challenging, but rewarding opportunity. And I look forward to, continuing on in the role. I've got a great team under me, been able to shore up that infrastructure. And so, so knock on wood, all good right now.
So this is Peter again. David, this, I don't think, if you're not in the business, I'm not sure how many people would appreciate that OptumRx is, does work with other health plans besides United Healthcare.
Sure.
So I guess, two questions. Could you name some of the clients? And are the services that you provide these other health plans the same sorts of things that you would provide a United Healthcare, that you provide United Healthcare, or when you're sort of working in more of a with a client relationship, does the role of the PBM change?
Yeah, so very similar set of services. We've been set up intentionally with very clear firewalls, which is why I have no responsibilities for United Healthcare. There's an entirely separate team. And the services will vary from client to client in terms of what their needs are, how much they want to delegate to us versus how much they want to retain in-house. But by and large, it's everything that a PBM would provide any other client. And we've tried to extend beyond that, given the nature of who we are, being a, part of this broader Optum enterprise. One of the luxuries that I have at my disposal is the ability to extend outside of pharmacy where our health plan clients need that, to bring in resources from other areas of the organization, whether it's, advisory, consultative services to help them grow, whether it's behavioral health support, whether it's, case management, care management support for different disease states that are a key priority for them. That's one of the unique parts of what we bring to the table that helps us distinguish ourselves when we're going out there and trying to grow in the marketplace in this segment. Clients, examples are, Blues plans, like our one of our most longstanding clients is Independence Blue Cross, Philadelphia. One of our newest clients, Blue Cross of Michigan. We have Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare as a client. We've got smaller regional players like Health New England here in the Springfield market where I reside up in Massachusetts. So, broad range of clients and a growing portfolio of clients in that particular space. I think one of the biggest things that's helped to differentiate us is the commitments to help them grow. We're putting boots on the ground now that are going out there with their sales team to help build an integrated pharmacy story and differentiate why the partnership of that health plan with us in that market is going to bring unique value to these, to their potential prospects as they, as they're pursuing that new business. That's been a big part of our success.
So it's full circle for you, back to Harvard Pilgrim.
Yes, back to my roots. Yes, back to my roots. But they're a great client. I really enjoy working with them, and we're excited now to be part of potentially their new integrated business. So we'll see where that goes.
So I would like to know, were you surprised by the approval of Aduhelm?
Yeah, again, I'm a little bit disconnected from the clinical side, but obviously still stay on top of it and still, talk with my colleagues on a regular basis. And these are things that, I'm interfacing with our health plan clients on. Was I surprised? I'll say no. It's not the first time we've seen the FDA make decisions that have varied from what an advisory committee may have recommended. Do I agree with the decision? I'd have to say that, as a clinician who's prided himself on making decisions based on evidence-based hierarchy, I think I'm a little disappointed by the decision, but I am appreciative of the challenges that the FDA had in front of it. You know, let's be frank, you know, Alzheimer's is a horrendous disease, growing prevalence as our population ages. We've had next to nothing in terms of new valued options for this patient population. The evidence is very limited. The evidence is questionable. And I think the organization is under a good deal of pressure, you know, from advocacy groups and so forth in terms of their evaluation here. So, you know, I think it's now up to the payers to make the decision as to how they feel, you know, this product should or shouldn't be covered for their patient populations based on the evidence at hand. We'll see how it. I know there's you know, additional studies that are going to be done and, you know, real world evidence that will be accumulated over time with those that are going on the product to determine, you know, the true impact of the disease on, you know, excuse me, of the drug on disease progression. You know, a lot of unanswered questions right now. And so I think time will tell. But again, I wasn't surprised because we've seen similar, you know, types of decisions. And, you know, Exondys was another great example where, you know, the data was very limited, very questionable. FDA still proceeded with the approval. Was that the right decision? I think it led to, you know, follow-on drugs that are demonstrating more and more value. So, you know, there were positives that came from that. And I'm hopeful that we'll see something similar here.
Peter, again. So yep. Are your clients covering this drug? Has Independence Blue Cross or Michigan Blue Cross come out and said whether they're covering it? And are you, is that part of your role now, or OptumRx's role, to advise them on these sort of clinical issues, or does that sort of fall into something that they handle themselves? Yeah.
So our job is definitely to advise them. So this is a drug we've been following. We've got a pretty extensive pipeline team. Many of them work with you guys, I think, on various parts of your publications. They've been tracking this drug for 10 years plus. And so we have been guiding them along the way as new evidence is emerging. Before it even went through the FDA advisory committee, when it came out of FDA advisory committee, we've been sharing information back and forth with them. Inevitably, it's their decision. This is a drug that's largely covered on the medical side. But, you know, even though we don't necessarily manage that, we're getting more involved with them, you know, in terms of medical pharmacy management. But inevitably, it's their decision as to, through their P&T committees or medical management committees, medical technology review committees, whatever it might be, as to what their coverage policies are going to be and to what degree they're going to cover it. A lot of them are still looking to see how the CMS you know, response. I think it won't be till early next year before CMS will make a determination as to formal coverage guidelines moving forward. So I think they're managing it on a case-by-case basis as it comes up, trying to limit coverage, you know, where possible to those that demonstrated some level of benefit, higher dose, specific subset of the population in the clinical trials, until more evidence emerges.
Now, earlier this month, President Biden issued a directive that touched on a wide range of healthcare issues. The Biden directive seeks to put more generics and biosimilars on the market. Do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, I think that's a positive thing. I think anything that helps to promote competition, that helps to impact affordability for members, affect affordability for plan sponsors is a welcomed endeavor. So, you know, we're fully supportive of that. We're doing everything possible with our clients to, you know, drive value out of generics as they make their way to market, and ensure that we're maximizing uptake of those generics wherever possible through things like step therapy and other utilization management edits, benefit designs that encourage uptake of generic drugs. So as long as it's being managed in a clinically appropriate, high quality manner, I'm all for it. And I think it only will benefit, the health system as a whole. We're under tremendous pressures right now, much of which is being driven by new entries into the specialty, you know, into the specialty marketplace. And it's only going to get more challenging as more and more gene and cell therapies make their way to market. you know, the pharmaceutical industry is largely focused on rare and orphan disease now. So if it's not cell and gene, it's orphan. And, you know, we know what the price tags are for these products as they make their way to market. So we've got to have something to offset that in order to provide a well-rounded benefit and to ensure that the broadest number of patients who are, you know, appropriate candidates for these drugs have access to them. And that's becoming more and more challenging for a lot of plan sponsors these days.
Now, lastly, on a lighter and more personal note, if you'd like to share with us, you know, something you do outside of work to keep healthy and maintain your well-being, maybe anything you took, or I'm sorry, anything new you took on from working from home, in the COVID, you know, quarantine setting, or in general that you do today, any hobbies or lifestyle changes?
Yeah, so I think we all had to make certain changes. I'm no exception to that rule. So I'm kind of a gym rat. I always have been. And I like to spend a fair, you know, probably 3 or 4 days a week. I was going to a gym, whether I was weight training or running or doing or playing basketball or something, just to keep myself active. So when the gym shut down, you know, I had to resort to outdoor activities. I am not a runner by any means, but I started running, you know, and there's a high school track, you know, right across the street from my house. And I could barely run a half mile when COVID started around the track. And then I've worked my way up, and now I'm, you know, I've run up to 10 miles. So
wow.
You know, little by little, you know, I've gotten there, and, you know, I've played more golf because I'm not traveling. So when the weather's good and it's an outdoor sport and it's one of the few things that didn't get totally shut down, I've spent a fair amount of time playing bad golf. I'm not very good at all, but I like getting out there and hitting the little white ball around and frustrating myself. So I do a fair amount of that. I stay active. I always have, not one to sit around on the couch. So I've just tried to maintain that and tried not to put on the, you know, the COVID-15 that everyone talks about. Yeah, I've been pretty good about that as well. Try to maintain good eating habits and, you know, getting outside as much as the weather permits. But here in the Northeast, it's been so rainy this summer. It's not been easy.
So I understand that bad golf actually leads to more exercise, right? Because you're going
to the rough. You're going into the woods looking for your mall all the time. Yeah. It's also led to several incidents of poison ivy, which I'm very allergic to.
And the 10 miles, did you do that on a, you didn't do that on a track, did you?
No, I did it on the road. I did it on the road.
Yeah.
No, eventually what happened was, as COVID restrictions enhanced, they actually closed down the track. So they weren't allowing people to come to the high school who weren't students. So shut down the track. Now it's forced to the main roads. So that was a matter of dodging traffic and trying to keep myself from becoming a casualty. But yeah, I made my way to flat roads. No hills.
You're outside of Massachusetts, and anybody who does any sort of running in Massachusetts has to start to think about the Boston Marathon.
Yeah.
Are you?
No. No. No, not at all. Not even a pipe dream. So I'm very happy doing my 3 or 4 miles, you know, a few times a week and calling it that.
At least you're set and certain on it.
Yeah.
At your rate of progress, we'll check in with you next year. I wouldn't be surprised if...
Yeah. Well, my knees are starting to talk to me, so we'll see.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.